Are you seeking more depth, more meaning, and a place to connect from the heart with fellow coaches and leaders? Then this is the right place. At Awaken Coach Institute, we create community where you can truly belong and show up as your whole self. Welcome to another episode on the Awaken Voices podcast. As you know, this season is all about love. And today we have Christopher Miller, a coach, entrepreneur, and author, as our guest to talk about his vision of expansive love. Asking the question, what can we do to exponentially expand love on this planet? Asking us questions like, what would love do? What would love say? And how would love feel? And so, as Christy and Christopher engage in this beautiful conversation, they explore what would be different if instead of reaching for love or doing all the things to strive for love, we would actually start by realizing and fully tapping into love and do our actions and movements out of that place. So I hope you very much enjoy this episode, and I wish you a beautiful journey.
Good evening, Christopher.
Good evening, Christy.
Yeah, morning for me. I think we're 12 exact hours apart here calling in.
Yeah, it's amazing being on the other side of the world and being able to have this kind of chat.
Yeah, and it's just so fun. And I, you know, I didn't even know you until seeing you on LinkedIn, I think from mutual friends, but your expansive love project is fascinating to me. So what do you want to tell us before we jump into your love story, just about where you're calling from, how you got over there?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm in Wellington, New Zealand, and I've been living here for about 18 years. And I grew up in Canada and went to university in Canada and then moved to the UK. And I lived in the UK for 12 years. And when I met my wife, Fiona, she was mildly obsessed with New Zealand, and we ended up immigrating in 2007, and it's been home ever since. So I consider myself a proud Canadian, married to a Scot with a Scottish son, and a proud Kiwi at the same time.
That's amazing. I just love stories like that where you love and enjoy everywhere you've lived and keep parts of it in your heart. Multinational lives are quite something. So you have, I don't even know what we would call it, a movement or an interest in expansive love. And so how did your love story start that led to all this?
Yeah, I feel really blessed. I had the opportunity to meet an amazing person on the dance floor of a Glasgow nightclub. And I met Fiona in 1997. And we connected right away. And I was living on the south coast of England, and she was living in Scotland. And we ended up commuting up and down the country for about 5 years, including a year and a half of marriage. Really, that journey with her was so special, and I felt so privileged. She was, for me, the epitome of unconditional love. which taught me a lot along the way. And we've had when we moved to New Zealand, we moved with our 3-year-old at the time, and then we had a second son here in Wellington, and we have built a wonderful life together. But unfortunately, in June of 2020, Fiona got diagnosed with a brain tumor. And unfortunately, 13 months later, she passed away in July of 2021, which was brutal and really challenging to navigate for us as a family. But I think what was interesting for me as I navigated grief and the loss of her and grieving not only her, but grieving the life we had and the future life we were hoping for. I think what was really interesting was that my capacity to love and just how much love I had inside me was fairly significant. And my boys benefited from that initially, but I knew I had more love to give, which is where expansive love came from, and was established to lift love on the planet at this time. So that's really my purpose, is to lift love if I can. Ultimately, it's starting with myself, but a lot of the work that I'm doing is in that direction, to help people acknowledge and recognize the love in their lives.
I mean, your eyes just sparkle and light up. I mean, there's so much joy when you talk about meeting Fiona and the dance floor and the commute and all of that. And then, of course, we can feel the grief with you when you talk about losing her 24 longer than that later.
Yeah.
And then that love with her and that she taught you is still so palpable throughout your whole story.
Yeah. And a lot of what I'm doing is in her memory. So she's still very much part of my life, and I feel her every day. But it's been interesting to orient that externally, and actually go, well, what can I do to help other people experience that? And it's little experiments each time, right? So I launched a deck of cards called Let's Talk Love, which facilitates conversations about love around family dining rooms and high trust teams. And that was a joy, because I love great questions. And so building a deck of cards that allows for questions about different facets of love, as well as fulfillment, inspiration, success, and happiness, it was a real joy to create and produce. And then the podcast that I launched just late last year, around expansive love dialogues, invites two people who care about each other to have a conversation about how love shows up for them. And so that's been really fascinating to recruit guests and see how that format could work. So each little experiment is changing something, I hope. But it's interesting and challenging to create that professionally, I suppose. I think it's really interesting.
Yeah. Well, it is interesting, because I mean, so many men struggle, and women too, struggle to use the word love in the workplace. And it sometimes feel like, oh, you have to be so brave or so courageous to step out and talk about this. But that's not quite the sense I get from you. It's almost like love itself propelled you. Like, this has got to be done.
Well, 18 months ago, it felt very brave. It felt super brave. Right? Like I've gone through that process, and I'm coming through the other side, which is kind of a feeling of, there's a congruence about it. There's an authenticity about it, where I feel it and I can't do it any other way. And so I and the interesting thing for the last 18 months to have gone through the courage phase, I can deeply empathize with leaders who struggle with a heart-centered approach, or men and women who struggle to talk about love in their relationship, or families who don't speak about love openly. I get it. I 100% get it. And I'm also convinced that it doesn't take that much effort to break through the courage it takes to have those kind of conversations and to feel more fully.
Yeah, I love how you talk about the courage phase, because that's really how it feels, isn't it? It's like you the first time it takes a lot of courage, and then it just, when you are in alignment and that's what's wanting to happen in the world through you, then it's almost like it couldn't be any other way. It's got to happen, and it will happen. And it does seem like love itself is a power that's just deeper and stronger than courage. I don't know if that's true for you, how you feel it.
I think it is one of, if not the most powerful emotions, elements. I don't even know how to label it. It's not that courage is less than love. I think they kind of go hand in hand. But it is interesting that it takes courage to lean into love. Like, I don't know why that is the case, but for most people, it takes courage. And even when you think about dating in your early, when you are dating, the courage to lean into love and be with someone and be vulnerable and be honest and be authentic and to show up for someone in a really warm, heart-centered way takes courage. It definitely takes courage. So I find it really interesting. And even some of what I have invested in is because of the state of the world. So the world is in such a crazy, chaotic state that I felt like, well, one of the things I can do is talk about love and be more loving, and kind of, even if I'm just doing it in my little circle, it'll make a potential difference. And we can see leaders around the world having the courage to make some difficult decisions and stand up to some interesting behaviors worldwide. And so, yeah, I think love and courage go hand in hand. And you almost can't have one without the other.
Maybe like every time you step into love a little bit further, there's that, there's a risk and uncertainty about the outcome, and what, you know, am I the only one? Am I the first one? Is someone going to join me here? And maybe anytime you go a little deeper into love.
Yeah. 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 And I certainly have felt that in the last 12 months for sure. Having been, well, and I still am, a business and executive coach for many years, for 17 or 18 years. To merge an identity of heart-centered leadership and a loving approach to life, to merge that into my public persona, the way I post on LinkedIn, how I show up for people, my current clients get it. They totally get it, and they value it 100%. But it doesn't change the fact that there's a nervousness on my part about, well, how am I perceived? What does it look like? How does it integrate into my professional value to the people I serve?
Imagine what's really attractive to people about your work is that you're clearly living it in your own life so wholeheartedly. Like, even when you use the words expansive love, it kind of gives me an image of something starting from yourself, from inside, that you lived and continue to live in your love relationship with Fiona and your boys, and that it's expanding out from there, which I think gives a very different feeling than if somebody was talking about heartfelt leadership without being the real deal or knowing what it is in family first. I don't know if that's what you get from your...
Yeah, and now I'll use the word congruent again. There's an element of the journey I've been on, the life experiences I've had, the 24 years I spent with Fiona, the 2 to 3 years of brutal grief. It has changed me. For sure it has changed me. And I can show up for anyone who have experienced a loss, and that loss can be a loved one, a parent, a child, a spouse, but it can also be loss of a job, loss of identity, loss financially. My empathy and my compassion and my understanding and it's deeper than sympathy. Like I deeply understand what people have gone through or are going through, and people can feel the authenticity of that, and that is helping me show up in a really honest and vulnerable way. I have wobbles. I have my own courage wobbles, but it feels more right than wrong, and more aligned than misaligned. And so that makes it easy to be myself.
And it sounds like you've just had such an openness to learning, and continue to have an openness to learning. Like you said, that Fiona taught you what unconditional love is, and that you're still each encounter that you have in days is teaching you something new, maybe, about love.
Yeah, I think I'm more aware. I'm really aware of it. I'm aware of it the way it shows up. I'm aware of, like, I'll witness something. I witnessed a mother and child. The child was probably about 4 or 5. And the mom was in full business attire downtown, and the two of them were skipping down the street, and it was just transparent love in the middle of downtown Wellington. And I was like, 5 years ago, before losing Fiona, I would not have even noticed. I wouldn't have acknowledged it. And so I'm very sensitive to giving, receiving, and witnessing love in ways that I haven't been in the past.
Wow. And that's how you talk about it in your quiz, I think, too. Giving, receiving, and noticing. What do you want to say about that?
Well, I think when I designed the assessment, the expense of love assessment, What I didn't anticipate was how many people would remark about the witnessing love component. So people are usually comfortable in themselves in giving love. They're aware of their limitations in receiving love. So most people are more comfortable giving than receiving and have barriers to receiving. But many of the people who have taken the assessment have come back to me to say, I didn't even think about witnessing love.
Yeah.
It wasn't even on my radar. Right. But that's why we love movies like Love Actually. Like it is witnessing it in action.
And there's something about being in the same room or down the same street as someone who's loving it. It is expansive. Like you can feel the energy of it. If you're in the room with a happy couple or a happy mother and child or whoever it is where there's love present, it's almost like it has this palpable vibration that goes out to people around.
Yeah, definitely. And you absorb some of that. Like you actually take, when you witness it, you take it on yourself and kind of go, oh, that's what it feels like. Or, oh, how might I show up differently in my relationships and in the way I'm being, right? So that example, when I saw them, the mother and child skipping down the street, that changed my day. It 100% changed my day. And I think it has the power to do that every time.
Yeah. Well, and what more do you want to say about grief and love? You know, I just, with the way the world has been and probably always has been, but, you know, I used to be involved in a lot of anti-racism work back in our days when we lived in DC. And one thing that always struck me, there's this concept in America called Black Boy Joy. And it's just when Black boys who've been so badly oppressed in the United States, there's just this welling up of joy. There can be singing together, just happy to be alive. And we see that anytime that there's oppression, or, you know, London during the Blitz, or what's going on in America with communities gathering together over their shared grief and wanting to sing and create. And it's something going on with grief and oppression that can bring out this, like, we will stand together with each other. And it does seem like there's a lot of artistry, writing, music that comes from that. What's been your experience?
Yeah, I have a theory attached to the relationship between fear and love. And when you talk about oppression and you talk about hardship and the Blitz and different examples in both North American society and global societies, I have this theory that when you go through a meaningful, significant period of fear, either individually or as a society, that somehow love rushes in, somehow love finds a way. And so while grieving Fiona wasn't necessarily fearful, although there was fear attached to the future, it felt like there was a pivot point where love rushed in. And in the communities that you describe, and some of the communities that are facing real challenge right now, it may take a few weeks or months or years, but at some point there is a pendulum that swings the other way, and it gives people hope. It gives people deep, deep hope that although I am fearful, there will be a swing towards love at some point.
Fascinating. And that's where the bravery, you know, courage comes in when there's fear. And there's actually, I grew up in the Christian religion. There's a verse in scripture that says there is no fear in love, and perfect love drives out fear. So there is a relationship that people have known about for thousands of years. That,
yeah, yeah. Well, and it's interesting. I have another project in mind around measuring love, which so the expansive love assessment that I've developed is only 10 questions. It's really quick. It takes less than 5 minutes, and it spits out your relationship to love in giving, receiving, and witnessing. And it's simple, deliberately simple in the way it's presented. I have another idea around helping someone understand their top five loving moments in life and their top five most fearful moments in life, and how love shows up for them in the context of those 10 moments in their life.
Oh, fascinating. What are you noticing?
Well, I've really only done it on myself at this stage. I haven't done it. I've got an interview process in mind to do it for other people. There's definitely there's self-awareness and there's the opportunity for self-management in understanding how you interact with really loving events and really fearful events, and how you attract love in a positive context and how love swings in during a negative event. So I haven't solved it yet, but.
Well, yeah, but it's like, there's this interesting thing where sometimes people feel like I need to produce love or do love or give love or receive love as if it's some kind of smaller than me kind of thing that can be passed around, or used in an exchange. And then there's also this love that's sustaining the whole universe and that does rush in. And I think, at least for me, what I'm writing about in my memoir is, what is it about love itself that is so much bigger than us that you can kind of relax into it and trust that love is the sustaining force, and that even if I'm grieving or upset or angry or fearful or something else is going on with me, there is something bigger than me that's upholding, and in coaching too, that I think sometimes we get stuck feeling like I want to give love to my client, or if we're especially aware, maybe receiving it back from the client or noticing it between us, but it's like it's too small. It's almost like it's just this personal love. Whereas there's also love, capital L, that is sustaining both coach and client, and we can, it's such a relaxing feeling to trust it.
Well, and that's the key word, trust. It's that faith. It's faith in the infinite reliability of it.
Yeah.
It is always there. It always will be there. And you're right. It supports coach and client. It supports mothers and fathers and families and society and countries, and even countries at war are supported by love in some way. And so that faith and that trust that it will always be there and will always create a positive intent or something similar. So I can't get I'm not getting the words right, but it's the,
it's doing its job. It will come and do its job no matter how much we try to move against it. It's like, I love how you said love rushes in. That feels like the truth of it to me. There's less of a personal, I've got to do this or create this or I've destroyed it or something. Like actual love can't be created, destroyed. It can be given and received in a way, but it's infinite. So it's not like you would have to pay for it or.
Well, that speaks to one of the things that I've speculated about, is that we all have 100% control of the love we give. And we have 0% control of the love we receive. But we all intuitively know that the love we give will go out from ourselves and come back 100-fold. And I don't know why we know that to be intuitively true, but it is. And it kind of speaks to your love holding everything in place, or it's always there. It's very powerful. It's very powerful, and as I said, infinitely reliable.
Yeah, and we're back to that trust and bravery. It's like it takes bravery when maybe we're afraid that it isn't infinitely reliable, or that what if I mess it up, or what if it's not, what if I can't receive it, what if it's not there for me. And it just seems like love is wanting to constantly remind us that here I am.
Well, and I'm still curious, even with the journey that I've been on over the last 18 months or so, I'm not sure why that courage shows up. I'm not sure why courage is required, but it is. It is in many, many instances of love showing up. So there's a relationship between courage and love, that it may not have to be there all the time, but much of the time it does.
It is really odd too, when love shows itself over and over again as infinitely reliable, and yet there's something about us humans, and maybe just the way we're wired for protection. Our nervous systems are, you know, waiting for the tiger to show up, and our brains are there to keep us safe, that we're afraid that maybe this time it won't, or it is really odd, isn't it? That it's so universal that we're afraid that it won't be enough for us, or that I won't be able to give it or receive it.
And there may be an element of trying to protect ourselves from pain, or loneliness, or there is the courage is a bit of a protection mechanism, I think.
Yeah. Well, I think too, maybe we know when we're not being that loving. If I can be really vulnerable right now, I had a really difficult situation about a week ago where I lied about something that was, it was a very tiny thing, just so small. It was just like, oh yeah, I said I was going to do that, and I hadn't said I was going to do that. And something about that little moment, it ruptured the love relationship that I had, and the person was just like, didn't want to talk to me for a day or two. And it was this really scary thing until I finally, 2 days later, was like, yeah, I didn't say that. And then there's something about this authenticity of like being able to own, this is what I did wrong. This is my weakness. This is, something I don't like about myself. And then the person can come back and give a hug, and there's this sense of relief that, okay, we're being honest. And then love can rush back in. So I think there's something about, or even the book, The Anatomy of Peace, that Jim Farrell wrote, where you're talking about congruence. And if you do something that's not congruent with love, and then you justify yourself, the more you do incongruent things and justify them, the further you move away from it. Whereas if you stop justifying yourself and you take ownership of, I was wrong, I hurt you, then you can get back to love almost immediately. But it feels very vulnerable. Like, what if I won't be loved when I'm not congruent?
Well, and what's the relationship between the pain or the disappointment you created in the other person, and the pain and disappointment in yourself that you created Like there's a relationship in those two things, right? And in order to heal, you have to heal both of those things.
Right. I mean, and yeah, and that's where I think forgiveness is a huge thing, because you've got to be able to love and forgive yourself for sticking around in destructive situations, or for what you yourself have done to hurt someone else. And we don't control the outcome, because we don't control if the person I love is going to come back and forgive me when I confess that, yeah, I wasn't in alignment with myself, and I did hurt you. And they don't have to. And so I think that love is the ultimate giving up of control. You don't know if the other person will respond or not. And they could respond out of fear or shame or something else.
Yeah. Yeah. And I suppose one of the things that comes up for me when you describe that situation is when you realize you had caused pain for both yourself and the other person, the question that came up for me is, what would love say?
Uh-huh.
And if you can lean into what love would do or what love would say to the person that you harmed, then the potential for forgiveness is much higher.
Yes, and there's a softening. But you're right. There is a little back and forth, just thinking of even that moment where I think if I had kind of confessed instantly while the person was still really mad at me, it might not have gone so well. So it's like you're kind of waiting for a softness from them, but enough softness from yourself, and maybe waiting for love itself to create a little opening where it's possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think both parties have to be ready for forgiveness.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be willing to forgive yourself, and the other person needs to be willing and in a good place to forgive you.
Yeah. And maybe the trust comes in too, that you don't have to control it. Love will find a way in if you're open to it, even if it's messy for a while in the meantime.
Yeah. Well, and there's another element in my belief system, which is everything happens for a reason. And so the rupture that was created happened for a reason. And the healing and the forgiveness also happened for a reason.
And that's really clear. Yeah, like love is doing this for us, even if it doesn't feel very happy or comfortable at the time. And I think for me, in that instance, truth-telling or admitting wrongdoing, I grew up in the kind of family that had so much punishment, and especially around truth-telling. If you said something that happened, but people didn't want to admit it, there would be punishment that would follow. And so for me, there's still a lot of fear around confessing or confronting someone else, like I didn't like this, or this wasn't my preference, because that was not met with love in childhood. So I think even it's a tiny little incident that happened, but it is very healing to have these moments now in adult life where it's like, okay, I messed up. I can talk about it and still be loved. And so you, kind of rewriting the scripts and rewiring the nervous system and the brain, that telling the truth is okay and having a preference is okay.
And did it make you reflect on how it might or might not happen in the future?
I mean, it was such a small thing in a way. I'll have to go reflect on that next. Because I do think it makes a difference. Like, new experiences do make a difference. Where, okay, with this person, I know that if I'm truthful, it will have a positive response.
Yeah. And I think what the whole cycle, the whole episode may influence your nervous system or how you think and what you say and how you show up with integrity, like your integrity is potentially stronger as a result of the cycle you went through.
Right. And who I choose to spend time with too, I think is stronger. Like, you're talking about how when you're walking down the street and you see an adult professional skipping with a child, that does something to your nervous system. And of course, we're drawn to people who can be like that in the world. And I think you can feel it too when people are not congruent in themselves, or they're trying to pretend they're 2% better than they actually are. That sort of distrust is a blocker to love. So maybe there's also something in there about trust, that
yes,
you can't control the outcome, but you can make sure you're with people who are aligned and congruent and trustworthy, so that you know that your nervous system can be relaxed around them. And I do feel like there's some kind of link too between love and just safety, relaxation. Like, if there's a trust breach, it's pretty hard for love to do its job in that situation.
Yeah. And I would go a step further. If you are in a fight or flight state of body, or an anxious state of being, it's very hard for love to get in. It's almost you are creating a physical barrier to it showing up.
And maybe that's where the bravery is, because it's such a vulnerability to relax and open your heart. I've done a bunch of body work over the last couple of years, because I came from such an abusive childhood, which I write about in my book. And there was something about learning to position my rib cage the way it's meant to, that gives more space for the heart and lungs to oxygenate the whole body. Whereas sitting in a position that is where the heart is closed or sunken does change things. And I think our bodies do move with those different energies. How much love is possible might be expanded just by the way I literally physically open my heart space.
Yeah. I think the world is only really waking up to the connection between body and mind and the outer world, and the way emotions flow through us. I think all of that it's all connected. And I think we're only at the beginnings of fully understanding it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I know for me, it's harder to be loving when I'm looking down and my shoulders rounded and my chest, my heart space kind of constricted or curled into me. There's just this more of a, you know, a fear response. And I think it's harder for people to love me when I'm sitting like that. Whereas as soon as I am opening and keeping my heart open, I do, there's something about receiving love. I think that is really a key to all of it. There's a marriage book by Harville Hendricks called Receiving Love, all about how most of us do not have a problem giving love, but it really is that receiving. We're not we're not vulnerably opening up our space to let it come in. It's like we're going to the ocean with a thimble-sized cup to receive from. And what would happen if we open to just receiving lots more that's available?
Yeah, and there's something to do with worthiness. Our belief, our limiting belief about how much love we are worthy of receiving affects almost everyone. And I think that's why in my assessment, people are totally okay with how much love they give. And they often acknowledge a shortcoming in love received. And it is connected to, do I deserve it? Do I deserve the love people are giving me? And am I willing to take unconditional love at face value? Am I going to judge it? Am I going to believe it? And how authentic is that unconditional love being shared with me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Stop showing up with a cup this big, but show up with a bowl or like
bowl.
As much bigger as we can in this moment, when it's so infinite and available. Or sometimes I think we think it has to come from this particular person in this particular way, which is why I think your witnessing love is such a powerful part of your quiz, that, oh, there's a whole lot more of it happening around.
Yeah. And it's really joyful and amazing when you witness love in a way that you weren't expecting, or you witness love in a way that you don't tend to receive, right? And you see it between two people, or between a person and a dog, or love is shows up all the time.
In nature, in trees, or rain, or, you know, 100%. There's something about those movies about love. It's always people dancing in the rain, because there's something about nature, water and sunlight. It's like all of nature is wanting to create life all the time. And so there's something even about just being outside that wakes us up to love.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can't, and it's interesting, you can't misinterpret it. When you see it, it's obvious. and even when you witness a type of love given and received that isn't familiar to you, it is still obvious as love. You know what it is.
My cousin wrote a poem many years ago that I just love, and it was just something about, you know, if you asking if we've run out of dog food when I'm heading to the store, but just how her heart was flooded with love in those just daily interactions of like, hey, I'm going to head out and pick up this or that from the shops. And noticing that as love too, in those little daily moments, what it does to us.
Yeah.
So how do you bring this into your coaching? You've been doing 15 plus years of strategy work, and now you're very open with clients and out there on LinkedIn and everywhere that you're doing this integrated, heart-centered leadership. What's that like?
So I feel like it's really subtle with my clients, and subtle in that without explicitly calling it out, I am helping them fall in love with their choices in life. So it might be a career junction, it might be an entrepreneurial investment, it might be a connection to purpose, it might be an issue at home connecting to the family. But I suppose what's changed for probably 16 or 17 years, I was very methodical in strategy. I was very methodical in achievement. I was an achievement strategy coach. I can still do that. It hasn't left me. But my lens is now love and heart-centered. And so if you don't love your career, what are you doing? How do you fall back in love with your career? Or if you don't love your business, what needs to change? What do you need to change? What do you need to change in the business? How do you fall back in love with your business? And if your energy is so in the business that you are neglecting relationships at home, what are the consequences of that? And if you really love all of your life, how do you balance the love you give and the love you receive at home and at work?
Yeah.
And so,
and I remember the last time we talked, we talked through the hierarchy of values, which is similar to the hierarchy of basic needs, that people are always living their lives backwards so much of the time, where you think you need safety or belonging or success or happiness or fulfillment as kind of steps to get to love. And love is the core state. It is the fundamental value of the world. And if we can start with love, what does love want me to know? What would love do in the situation? What is love showing? How does that show up in desires in my heart? What would I love for my business? You start with love, then fulfillment, happiness, success, belonging, and safety are like free gifts that are poured out. They kind of almost happen automatically.
Well, and Christy, it makes life so much easier. Like if you start with that and you let it cascade down, it all just flows. I think if you strive from the bottom up, you are striving your whole life.
I have to be successful, or I have to be happy, and I want to push and strive and make it happen, instead of being like, love is already doing it. Work. How would if I just allow love to do that and trust that the finances will come in, or the success, or the happiness, or whatever else wants to happen?
Yeah. Well, and I have intentionally helped people realize the difference in head decisions, heart decisions, and gut decisions, and how to integrate those decisions. Or when is it appropriate to follow the heart and not worry so much about what the head is screaming? And actually, most people who buy a house fall in love with it first, and then they figure out the finances. That's the biggest purchase most people make in their lifetime. And same goes for your life partner. Your heart screams at you first. And then you do the math on is this the right partnership? But if the heart is pounding loudly enough, you will listen to that and only that.
And what a beautiful guide for all things big and small. Yeah. What makes your heart light up? And my team has to remind me of that so often here at Awaken. Sometimes I'll just be trying to make a new program work and it's not working. And Emma will just ask, well, what would make you really love this program? And I'm like, oh yeah, I forgot about that again. I was thinking about what are we going to do about money or something else.
Yeah. And I think what's been one of the philosophies that I have shared with clients, and that I am finding a way to be faithful to myself about, is follow your heart and the money will follow.
Yes. And just as you talk, I can see that happening so many times in my life, where something that I just really, really wanted to do sells out before I have a website or the pricing or anything up in public. It is like love wants to combine forces with us humans and make the next wonderful thing happen in our life.
Yes, it does.
Christopher, what else would be important to say? You know, normally at Awaken, we end our podcast by asking about spirituality. And I feel like this whole conversation has been spiritual in nature, even if we're not using that exact word. But you can either speak about how love connects with your view of spirituality or anything else you think would be really important to leave listeners with today.
When I set up Expansive Love, I felt like it was significant and I felt like it was important. But I also felt one of the ways to lighten the responsibility of lifting love on the planet is to just realize all I need to do is lift my own love. How much I give, how much I receive, and how much I witness. I only need to do that for me. The rest of the world can look after itself. So that for me is connecting. I'm aware of the bigness of it. I'm aware of the spiritual element of it. And on a practical level, I just want more love in my life. That's it.
Yeah. The soul does not care about scale because it's already magnificent and fully connected. And so, yes, that is such a powerful word to end on.
Excellent.
Thank you.